I have no comments on the case.
But go to Commissioner Crispin's office, and there's a bigger buck than I've ever even seen hanging in his walls.
So. And I did notice this, you guys didn't even ask me if I got a deer.
We knew you did, and we were embarrassed. So
I didn't get a deer, nor did I hunt for one. I don't have any opening comments either. I'm excited for the opportunity to learn about the settlement and have an open discussion about the pros and cons and why, what was involved in the negotiations. So.
Okay, maybe if we, who's taking the lead for you guys, Dan or Frank or Garrett or?
I'll make the introduction, and then we've, Commissioner, we've got four witnesses here that will be presenting some PowerPoint slides. So.
Okay.
But I think Mike wants to go first.
All right, maybe if we could just to start, the commissioners have all identified themselves. Maybe if we could do the row here, and maybe go to all the MDU staff in the back just so we can kind of get a feel for people who are listening who might be in the audience. So, Mike, why don't you go ahead and start?
Mike Diller, advocacy staff.
Frank Morehouse, President and CEO for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Garrett Singer, Vice President of Regulatory Affairs and Chief Accounting Officer for MDU.
Dan Kuntz, Associate General Counsel, MDU Resources Group.
Okay. Maybe you can grab a mic to the back row there.
Travis Jacobson, Manager, Financial Reporting and Planning.
I am Bob Morm, the Director of Gas Supply for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Tammy Eberly with Montana Dakota.
Rita Mulkern with Montana Dakota.
Mark Hansen, Montana Dakota.
Mike Gardner, Executive Vice President of Utility Operations Support for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Good afternoon. Ann Jones, Vice President, Human Resources, Customer Service and Safety.
Is that all?
Jay Scable, Vice President of Operations.
Andrea Stomberg, Electric Supply, Montana Dakota.
Okay, perfect. And then we have members of our staff in the audience too, but we won't need to go through that, I don't think. Before we turn it over to Mike, I just wanted to make sure I'm clear, and to my colleagues, if they have any questions about what we're doing here today, is we're having this informal on the proposed settlement agreement between the company and advocacy staff. We've got the public input sessions December 10th and 11th. We've got the deadline for intervention as well as people requesting formal hearings. So I think we're all tracking, I think, what we're doing here today. I think this is a good idea, but I would just say that I won't have a lot of questions perhaps today, just because I'm going to reserve that right for somewhere down the road. But I do really appreciate what we're trying to do here today and just look forward to hearing the information. So I don't know if that – anything else you guys have in the process, Randy or Julie?
Well, the only thing is we know them, but maybe our staff should introduce themselves.
Sure, by all means.
The MDU people.
Good point. Patrick, why don't you grab that?
Thanks. Patrick Fawn, Commission staff.
Sarah Cardwell, Commission staff.
Julie Prescott, Commission staff.
Ryan Norrell, advocacy staff.
All right, perfect. All right, thank you, Randy. Julie?
I would just add, in terms of framing this discussion, as we have a member of the media with us as well, this is an opportunity for the public to hear about this settlement agreement and what the components of it are, and engage in advance of the additional proceedings in December. So I think that was one of the benefits of having this discussion today, is getting all the issues out on the table early so people can get involved as they are interested in doing so.
Okay, perfect. All
Did
right,
it work? So is this not working?
Okay, Dan, so you said you want Mike's going to take off first?
I think Mr. Diller wants to.
Mr. Diller, okay. Mike, it's your nickel then.
Okay, very well. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity. It's a little unusual, I know, to be presenting this before consumers have had a chance for customer input and to wait for the notice of intervention to expire. But as Julie said, I guess I was very hopeful that the media would pick up on this and hopefully will generate more public interest in what we do. And I feel like the more information they have ahead of time, the better able they'll be able to participate in those input sessions. So sorry for my voice, but it's just what I live with. so I'll just do the best I can. I've prepared a number of slides, not as many as MDU, but a number of them. And we'll just get started then. This is one that I think media could help us explain to customers. A lot of times they think we control everything up here in the ivory tower, and in fact we do not. The average bill there you can see for a residential customer is somewhere between $6 and $11 from 2003 to 2012. Below that, the red line indicates the cost of gas, and what the cost of gas illustrates is that's the actual market price of gas that MDU pays for, as well as the transmission costs, which are regulated by FERC. And so the sliver between those two lines is actually what we're talking about today. That's the portion that the commission regulates. The next slide is similar, but just to draw a finer point. Here you notice that customer bills can fluctuate anywhere from 25% increase in 1 year to minus 21% increase there in 2007. And so if you, and then what I did was I just put on there the rate increase that was last granted in 2004 of 2%, and the 4% settlement agreement out there in 2014, and it kind of shows you that customer bill impacts aren't all that predominant. It's not the increase that we're talking about here is rather small compared to the change in cost of gas that we see each year. Here's a slide that just shows you the earnings the company has been reporting to us since 2000. Generally speaking, we think of 10% return on equity as being a reasonable return on investment. And you can see about half the lines are below that and the other half are above that. And overall, it's been around 10%.
Mike, what was the authorized return on equity during that period? Was it? It must have fluctuated too.
Oh,
that'd be nice to see what was authorized to what was earned historically.
I believe the 2004 test case was settled, and I don't know if we specified the ROE we agreed to.
I have it here.
So, in this case, we're advocating 10%. Okay. In the 2004 case, I don't believe we specified the ROE we were agreeing to, but I can say from experience that it was higher than 10%.
Did we have the collar on in 2004 that we have proposed now? We didn't, did we?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
It was a $2.5 million increase, and that was it. Okay. So that's where we've been. This is just a simple example of how MDU has come up with its request. I think it's important to look at. It'll kind of set the stage for the rest of the slides to follow, but they advocate that their investment in North Dakota is around $80 million for 2014. They need a rate of return of 8%, which is a blending of the ROE rate to stockholders of 10% and the cost of long-term debt around 6% or thereabouts, maybe a little higher than 6%, but averages out to 8%. And then so you take one times the other, you get a return requested. Under current rates, the company estimates that it'll make $2 million in 2014, so you have a return deficiency of $4.2 million. Of course, you don't actually get a return to distribute to stockholders or long-term debt holders unless you gross it up for taxes. And so that last little calculation there is you divide the return deficiency by the tax coefficient, and that's the actual revenue deficiency that MDU is asking for in 2014 of $6.8 million.
Hold on one second. This one, Mike. The return... The ROR requested 7.88%.
Right.
In the settlement agreement in 2004, if I'm reading it right, it was 8.79.
Right, and that would be a blending again of long-term debt costs, which were higher back then, as well as an equity cost that would likely be higher than the 10% we're advocating here today. So the three components that we're really interested: investment, return on investment, and earnings. I mean, that's basically the three components that we're interested in here. So, next. I will say before I move on that when MDU first said, Mike, we're going to file for a rate increase, I thought they were crazy because I'd been looking at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 earnings, and they were doing quite well, and I thought they were joking at first. But then you get to this slide, and you kind of understand what's going on. In the last test year, 2005, the one that the commission ordered on last, MDU had an average rate base of $20 million. Now in 2014, they're going to hit about $80 million, or really quadrupling the rate base since 2005. And so that's quite an investment shift, and that starts to give you an idea of why MDU is in here today. I had an idea that the current investments were probably more geared towards the Badlands, and so I tried to divide up the costs best I could from their application and work papers. And indeed, a lot of the investments are going to their Badland region, which you'd kind of expect. That's where the growth in the state is right now. And Garrett will remember this. I said, well, Garrett, why don't we just increase the rates of the Badlands region rather than this across the board? And Garrett reminded me that, well, we didn't do that when we went in and replaced Minot's gas lines. We didn't do that when Bismarck has been growing for the last 10 years, really. We didn't go out to the Badlands and say we want, we're just going to charge Bismarck or we're just going to charge Minot. So there is a socialization of rates that goes on. And right now their expenditures are out in the Badlands, and everyone will pay for those investments.
Mike, do you have a number that, when you talk about Minot, I presume you're talking about the flood event?
Right.
So is there a number embedded in here that we could say that this X amount here was probably what's caused because of the flooding in Minot? I agree with you on spreading it across, but I've just, with Xcel Energy's rate case, it was very nice to point to this is what it costs for this event.
Right.
And so that would be a nice number to have just as a perspective that there is a chunk of this that was Mother Nature at play.
Sure. Well, it would be built into the investments, sure. But
there's
don't.
There's probably a dollar. There is a dollar amount.
There is sure. a dollar amount. I don't know what it is, but we can get that to you.
Thank you.
All right. And so then I wanted to refine it a little more. And okay, if you only had $20 million worth of rate base in 2005, what are you spending $30 million on in just 2013 alone? And so, again, I tried to carve it up a little bit to give you an idea of where they're spending money. A quarter of it's being spent on main extensions and looping the cities, about a quarter on upgrading upgrading town border stations, another 20% on customer information system. And it starts to paint a little bit of a picture when you look at all the pieces of the pie and you think, well, which one of those are revenue-generating investments? I mean, if we upgrade town border station, that doesn't increase our revenues. Extending mains and loops, I guess in the end it does, but really, until you hook up service lines and meters, you're not increasing your revenues. It's going to come. The customer information system, that doesn't add revenues. The new Williston office building doesn't increase revenues. And so you start to see what I probably have in a later slide, where basically investments are outrunning revenues at this time. We all expect revenues to catch up over time, but So that starts to give you an idea of again, why there's a rate increase in front of you. I did the same thing in 2014. It's only $15 million instead of $30 million, but similar kinds of investments being made.
Mike, and this might be for the company when their turn comes, but I was in Watford City in 2008, and they were basically, MDE was shutting down that office. It was all, there was one guy hanging out there. And so there was a move from the companies to consolidate offices, and now we're buildings that are offices, and I think that makes sense. But how did they cost share between the electric side and the gas side with an office? Or I assume they're shared spaces, but I might be wrong.
I guess I'll let MDU talk. I don't know how much they share, but I'll let them answer that question. Okay. I think I'm ready to move on. Okay, so we've looked at investments. Now we're going to turn towards the return on investment or rate of return. This is rate of return depicted here, which assumes a 10% ROE. And so if I'm assuming 10% ROE throughout time, what you see here then is really the reduction in cost of long-term debt. MDU has refinanced all of its long-term debt, and as you know, interest rates have been favorable. So, you know, when you think about it, I just talked about all the investments they're making that are improving their system, enhancing their ability to provide service in the future, but not really revenue producing. But you look at the low cost of capital and you think, you know, if you're going to do these kinds of things, it might be right now. And so you got low cost of money, and you've been putting off these expenditures as long as you can. And so I think it's a pretty wise move. Nobody likes rate increases, but I think it's pretty wise.
But a lot of these investments are being made to serve more customers.
Yes.
So they are.
Oh, certainly.
To generate more.
In the end, yes. But think about, let's think about a main, for example. You put in a new main, you extend a new main, big pipe. That's not automatically hooked up to all the service lines and all new. I mean, it takes a while for the customer base to fill in, so to speak. And so you're right, though. Yeah, that's why it's only a 4% increase and not more, because there are additional revenues coming in, additional customers coming online. Okay. So now I'm going to move to the operating income side of things. And what I've depicted here is just three big general categories. The blue line through the middle is just to show that don't fall asleep and think that I have all of the history in there. What I'm showing you there is a 2004 budget in their last case and what actuals ended up being. 2005 test year, what 2005 actuals were. Then I skip over to current day, 2012 actuals, 2013 budget, 2014 budget. And the 2014 budget, I guess you could call that a test year. But in any event, what's interesting here is MDU has held its O&M costs really to the same level it proposed in 2005. And that's fairly remarkable, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm sure they'll talk more about it. But depreciation really is the big driver here, as you might imagine. If you've quadrupled rate base, then you're going to have depreciation expense increases to reflect all that new investment. Mm-hmm. Property taxes, I don't know if MDU screwed up there or what, but you'd think all that investment property taxes would go up more than what they're showing there. But we do know the legislature keeps pushing those taxes down each session, so maybe that's the answer to that. All right, so let's look at expenses in a little more detail. And I just start from the bottom and work up, because you see where the big money is right away. Labor costs make up more than half of their O&M expense. And what's rather remarkable, again, is that back in 2005, they had labor costs a little less than $10 million. Today, for this rate case in 2014, it's even less than what they asked for last time. And they've been able to do that through consolidation efforts. They acquired at mergers and acquisitions of Great Plains Natural Gas Company, Cascade, Intermountain. And so they've been able to consolidate some of their administrative functions. And I don't know if you knew people that lost their jobs when they moved the customer service center from Bismarck to Idaho. I did. I knew people who lost their jobs as a result of that. To me, it was a very hard decision, one that I probably would have been a wimp and not made if I was running the show. But they made the hard decision. And so I don't recall how many, I think you let go 80, how many people do you guys?
I don't have that number in total, probably in that range, maybe around 50 to 75.
50 to 75. So a hard decision was made, and that's why you have numbers like that.
So is the staff actually smaller? It has to be, unless they haven't gotten any raises since 2005.
They have. They've gotten raises, and yes, the numbers are less. You know? Okay, the next box up from that is benefits. Again, another big share of O&M costs, and there you see benefits decreasing as well. One of the things they've done is they've quit offering defined benefit plan to their new customers. They've frozen the defined benefit plans for their union and for everyone essentially, and moved to a 401k plan. I actually think that the state of North Dakota should do the same thing. There's too much risk for companies to bear under a defined benefit plan, and I think it reflects the current culture of young people wanting to take their money and move and go somewhere else, and it's just smart business. It limits the company's risk, and therefore it limits ratepayers' expenses or risk of expenses. And so, again, nobody likes to lose a defined benefit plan, but MDU made that decision. I thought it was a good one. And I'll just talk about the next one. The rest of them are pretty small in comparison, but contract labor is up quite a bit, and I think the commission can identify with that themselves. Our contract labor is up quite a bit, and it's because we've been working our butts off the last 4 or 5 years, and we've had to hire some outside help. And so it's only natural that MDU would find itself in the same position out in the Badlands. So that's my expense story, I guess. The last piece, really, then, is to talk about income streams. We've talked about investment, return on investment, expenses. Here we're going to look at projected margins, or let's call it profits. So, starting back in 2001, we were at $18 million, and now we're projected to be at above $28 million in 2014. The value of this line is, I wanted to see, are the margins they're projecting, are they dipping now that they're in here for a rate increase? Are they about on the same line? And they look like they're about on the same line, so it gives me some comfort that, we're being fair and honest here. But I want to dig into it a little more and assure myself of reasonableness. So created this little pie chart to show me where's all the money. For settlement purposes, we don't have to dig into every nook and cranny of the proposal, but let's look at the really big critical pieces. Firm General and Residential are the customer groups that are contributing most to the margins. And so then here what I did was
general.
What's that?
Firm General.
Yeah, business. Okay. Yeah. What I did here was let's look at residential customers. And you're saying, well, why would you look at customers instead of volumes, Mike? Well, the proposal in front of you, one, volumes go where customers go, but two, the proposal you have before you is to eliminate the volumetric charge and rate design. I know we're not talking about rate design today, but if you do that and you move rates to just customer pays for the cost of gas they use, and they pay one fixed rate for service, then this gives you a really good idea of the strength of their forecasting. And so up into 2004 through 2011, you could draw a straight line, and I could have told you, if nothing was changing, what 2012 margins would be. It'd be, the green line there would indicate. But things are changing. And I drew another line. Okay, so we see things are changing between 11 and 12. Another line. And so if that's true, then I know where 13 and 14 margins will be. No, MDU is forecasting that those margins will grow quite a bit more than that. And so what this helps me do is see that this is a fairly aggressive forecast on behalf of MDUs, and it gives me some comfort in reaching the settlement agreement. I did the same thing for firm general gas customers, and the 2011 and 12 actuals don't show a pronounced increase like the residential, but anyway, the line straightens out and keeps going for 13 and 14.
So how far out you think you can feel confident with that? Should the settlement agreement says that MDU agrees not to file application for up until January of 2015. Could that be January of 2017?
well, that's not part of the agreement, but I...
Well, that's what I see in the settlement agreement, page 4. Rate moratorium, MDU agrees not to file application for increase North Dakota natural gas service rates till January of 2015. So it's in there.
Right. But I thought you asked about 2017.
Well, could it be 2017? Based on the predictability that I think you're telling me.
I'm sure we could reach an agreement for 2017, but it might be more expensive than the ratepayers or you want to pay for. Whenever you go out that far, there's a lot more.
So you're confident that number is a fair number for both the customers and the company?
Right. We're trying to establish rates based on a 2014 test year. I was going to address that later, but since you brought it up, let's talk about it right now. This company is in a state of flux. The state is in a state of flux. And so forecasting with a great deal of certainty is pretty difficult. And so that's why you will see in the settlement agreement a price cap on 2014. I would like to think that MDU has a crystal ball and could tell us exactly what's going to happen. I'd like to think I have one. Truth of the matter is we're both wrong. And so we've looked at it as hard as we can. We've come up with, I think, a reasonable solution and with some protections on the back end for consumers. And in the event things turn out in the favor of MDU, they'll have to refund money in 2014 and beyond. If it does not, well, they can always file for a rate increase after 2014 is over. And so I think it's a pretty good proposal. There's some protection here for ratepayers.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Oops, I guess I was done. but that's a cool picture, the little safety net there. All right.
Yeah.
Summary. Let's see if there's anything in here I haven't talked about already. Other benefits captured for ratepayers. I guess I would just say here's some other benefits that you might think about. And I've already mentioned the 2014 cap and the sharing of earnings beyond 2014 until the next rate case is filed. But some of the other benefits is rate cases cost a lot of money. I'm authorized to spend $175,000 hiring consultants to do this work. The company will spend more money than they've spent so far, and all those costs get rolled through expenses, and ratepayers pay for them. So, one of the benefits is we're gonna get rid of, if we can, we're going to really knock that down. Maybe save $250,000. That's not a lot of money in the electric business, the electric side of things, but in the gas side, it's probably worth a third of an ROE, a third of a percent ROE. So, to me, that makes sense. I don't know. Oh, yeah, and the other one that I haven't talked about is the as a result of this settlement, we've agreed to a lower interim rate increase. They were, by law, allowed $4.5 million, and as a result of this settlement agreement, they've accepted $4.25 million. And that's a little bit by design. I think that concludes my slides. If the commission has more questions of me, I know the company usually goes first, but I get tired of playing second fiddle to these guys. they'll fill in the gaps, I'm sure. But
when do you think the rate design question will be fleshed out?
Well,
that's not part of this.
Right, it's not part of this. I think we wait till after customer input sessions are over. We wait until the notice of intervention is expired. We might have more players in here.
That's where I was going with this, because rate design may drive other groups to intervene or show up and ask for hearings, and so.
Exactly, yep.
Okay.
Mike, when do you mentioned a couple times that revenues are behind investments now, but may catch up. At what point do you think they may catch up, or have you any indication of when that might be? And at that point, what trigger do customers have for having another check on this to see if they're paying the right amount or if they're not paying too much at that point?
Right. Well, in 2014, any earnings over 10% ROE will be refunded to customers, all of it. There won't be any sharing. Okay. It all goes back to customers. You're going to get that report in maybe April of 2015. If there's something, if it's out of whack very far, the commission has the capabilities of negotiating with the company for lower rates. They can file a show cause if they want to get tough and make them come in here and show you why their rates are reasonable, and you can adjust them from there. I mean, you have some recourse. Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
Before I forget, Mike, would you offer all this up as your testimony on behalf of advocacy staff?
Yes, I would.
All right, perfect. Randy, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Just one question, last one I can think of, Mike, is if you could have got one more thing in this settlement agreement, what would you have got?
I was going to say free gas service, but I live out I live out in the country, so one more thing. Commissioner, I think it is a fair settlement.
You didn't take the bait, huh, Mike? All right, thank you, Mike. All right, go on once. Julie, anything else?
I might ask him some at the end if we have time.
Okay, sure. All right, thank you, Mike. So we'll turn it over to the company.
Thank you, Commissioners. I don't have an opening statement, but I just want to point out and introduce, we have a PowerPoint presentation here with it. We'll be using four witnesses to go through the PowerPoint, and then we hit, as you heard, we have some additional people here in the room as resource people in case the commissioners have questions that we can't answer by the four folks that will be presenting on the PowerPoint. Introducing the four people who will be presenting is Frank Morehouse, our President and CEO. Mr. Morehouse will talk about the basically present an overview of the company's original application, state of support for the settlement agreement, and then really highlight some of the reasons that are driving the need for this rate increase, kind of taking off from where Mr. Diller touched on. Our next witness will be Garrett Singer, our Vice President of Regulatory Affairs and Chief Accounting Officer. Mr. Singer, who with Mr. Diller was the primary negotiator of the settlement agreement, will talk about the key aspects of the agreement and then also talk about changes in the company's investment and operation and maintenance numbers since the last rate case. Again, as you heard from Mr. Diller, the increased investment over the last few years is really driving this particular change. Jay Scable, our Vice President of Operations, will discuss some of those major investments that we've made in the natural gas business in North Dakota. And then finally, Bob Moorman, our Director of Gas Supply, will provide a little more detail around the investment in the town border stations, and then also kind of finish up with the description of the components that make up the delivered cost of gas to the customer. So with that, I would turn it over to Mr. Morehouse and the presentation.
Thanks, Dan. Chairman, Commissioners, I appreciate your time today to listen to our presentation here. As Dan mentioned, our application was filed back in September. We asked for an initial increase of a little over $6.8 million. That was a 6.4% overall increase. And that change is in the distribution rates only. I think Mr. Diller made a very good point with his slide that showed the difference between cost of gas and then our margin. And I would also remind everyone that our last rate case was filed back in 2004, which puts us on about a decade. I think this is a very appropriate slide for us to start with. It definitely shows some differences. Our company's roots started right here in North Dakota in about the same location that we were talking about today, the Bakken area, western North Dakota, and we started 90 years ago. We are very proud to be a business partner. Having gone through all of these years in North Dakota, it's a very exciting time for all of us as residents of North Dakota to see the changes that are occurring in our state, the energy independence that we have, and the ability that we have to provide an essential energy product to our homes and businesses. It's been 9 years since that last change. We've asked that you consider this as a very fair and appropriate change to our rates. I think it's interesting when we go back even that short period of time, if we say pick a gas price in December of 05, winter would have been upon us. We'd have been looking at a total delivered price to a residential homeowner here in North Dakota at about $13. Today, here we are 10 years later. There's not many products or commodities out there that have this same story, but today with this rate case, if we implement the new rates, that same gas would get delivered at about $7.30. So an overall decrease in energy costs of over 40%. We're very pleased to be able to come to the state, come to our customers and say, we're working hard, we're taking advantage of this abundant energy supply, and I think we're providing a lot of benefits. Over that period of time, Mr. Diller's slides represented it well. We've invested over $100 million in the last decade here in infrastructure within our state to continue to provide safe and reliable energy services to our homes and our businesses and our communities. I would want to very personally thank Mike and staff, as well as Garrett and his staff, for working very diligently on this settlement. It pleases me to see the regulatory process work in this way. I think it provides a very fair outcome. It's very efficient. It saves everybody money, saves everybody time. And to me, this is exactly how I think the energy industry should be able to work with our regulators and our customers to have a favorable outcome for everyone. And as we go through, I think we're going to present a lot of information. I know we have public input sessions to come. We've got some other hurdles to get through here, but as we go through this, I would say I would very much like to respectfully ask for an approval of this settlement as filed as we go forward and more fully disclose all of the details of the settlement proposal. The primary reason for the request for the increase, of course, is that $100 million. When you deploy that much capital into infrastructure, We definitely have had some customer growth over that period of time. We do think that we'll see that continue, but that is a rate base increase of 280%. It is offset some by the lower return requirements. Cost of capital is a little bit lower. We have worked very hard over the last decade to keep our O&M expenses down. I think it was apparent in Mike's slides there regarding the labor costs. Commissioner Fedorchuk asked that question, are we paying people less? No, they've had raises all along. We have actually less people doing more work than we had a decade ago. Some of that is the deployment of technology. Some of that's new equipment, new way of doing things. So we're pretty happy about that. Residential, go
just
ahead.
Just really quick, do you have a percentage in terms of how many fewer you're working with now than at your max?
No, I don't have that exact number with me. I can say overall we had, as we went through our merger process and our ability to combine operations and leverage our staff across the 8-state area that we have, we reduced staff in total across the 8 states by about 18%. That has begun to creep back up pretty rapidly now, especially with the activity here that we're seeing in the Bakken. We have big challenges, Minot, Williston, Watford City. But overall, that would have been about the change in staff that we had.
Okay, thank you.
The other point that I make is, and again, one that we're pleased to see, over time, we are getting to be more and more efficient with the design of the residential homes, the insulation package, the equipment that are installed, furnaces, water heaters, stoves, that things of that nature. So average residential use has actually declined over that period of time.
Frank, how are you approaching the challenges with developer X wants to put a whole new subdivision in Watford City? And how you'd allocate those costs. Do you guys take 100% of those costs early, or do you cost share with the developer? I've heard a lot of anecdotal stories about the challenges on that.
It is very challenging to try to meet those. One, the developer does not necessarily want to pay for that infrastructure up front, and yet we don't know how successful. We don't know how to measure or gauge the risk associated with that. It could be a sunk cost that were never recovered if the residential development doesn't come to fruition. So we're working very hard. This is kind of a new issue for us to see that kind of growth occur in such big lumps, I'll call it. You know, it used to be you'd see the city of Bismarck might be a nice example. In the north end, you saw disciplined growth that you could forecast forward, and you kind of knew how to design your system sizing and things of that nature. And with the rapid expansion that we've seen in those particular
cities.
But
do you have a particular policy that you use? I get that question a lot.
We do. We have within our tariffs, we have a contribution and aid of construction, and it's basically a financial equation that says.
But they do. The developer does pay a big chunk of this.
The developer does pay a big chunk of that. And we can put agreements in place to where if they pay for it up front and they more rapidly come to a full subdivision, let's say, then that we can make some refunds back to the developer for those upfront dollars that were put in place. But we do work very diligently with the developers on trying to accommodate their growth and our growth.
Thank you.
Highlights since the last rate case, you can see that our total customers went from 87,000 to 103,000. That's a 19% increase. Our rate base has really made the jump, 222% increase. One that I'm very proud of is those O&M costs per customer down from 200 to 170. That's a 15% increase. And then our overall return has actually gone down. Most of that, again, driven by the fact that the interest rates are lower out there and we're able to take advantage of those capital markets and then pass on those savings to our customers.
Frank, can you give some information in terms of what's in the rate base per customer? What would be included in that?
Oh, again, all of the infrastructure, okay. The facilities that are in mains, I think Jay and Garrett will both talk a little bit more in detail of that, but your mains, your services, the meters themselves, we have an automated meter reading system in place, so they've got electronic devices on the meters. That way we don't have to send somebody to the house every month to walk up there and take a reading. We can do that electronically. Our collector, data collectors, are mounted basically on all of our power poles around town, so we can read both electric and gas meters at the same time. All of that comprises what we would consider rate base.
And rate, in addition to that, then rate base is your net plant, and Frank very well described what those net plant values are. We also, that's offset then by deferred taxes and depreciation expense.
And it's so high because it's new.
Appreciate Fedorchuk. If I could just interject here, and you know, Montana Dakota system is, as Frank mentioned, started 90 years ago. So a lot of that system was depreciated. So for older customers like me, really had the benefit of that plant that was put in the 50s and, you know, maybe even earlier. And so that kept the costs way down. Well, now when you go through this expansion and you've added that, you know, faster than you can add customers. So, I mean, even for a new customer who was just being built, you'd be looking at an average cost per customer much higher today than from that same customer who was being served with facilities that are largely depreciated. So that's kind of an impact that you're seeing here, is the fact that you're replacing largely depreciated plant with brand new plant.
Right, I want to talk a little bit about the revenue requirements and in the settlement and what's included in the settlement. And we filed that on October 23rd. And the settlement calls for an increase of $4.25 million. And as Mark had previously mentioned, that's the same level as what will be included in the interim rates increase. That's about a 3.9% overall increase in rates. It includes a 10% return on equity that is capped in 2014. So should the company earn 10.01% or 10.1%, that excess, that additional 0.10% would be returned to customers. So, again, we're capped at 10%. In addition to that, in 2015, if we would earn over 10%, there would be a 50-50 sharing as well. So we would share then in the overage in 2015 and or until the next rate case. There is a moratorium included in this settlement on filing a new case not until 2015. It excludes the Billings landfill gas production investment and those expenses in that investment. Those are pulled out of rate base and pulled out of the cost of service.
Garrett, how do you view that moratorium? Does that mean that you're telling me now that January 2015 you're going to be back here in a rate case? Or are you telling me that you have the ability to come back?
We have the ability. Should we think we need to file, we'd have the ability to file one in 2015.
Okay. So I want to make sure I'm clear.
Yeah. Ability. We're not saying we're going to.
Thank you.
And then depreciation rates exclude the net negative salvage or net cost removal costs that were included in the case. And what the settlement includes would be the current depreciation rates that the utility currently is utilizing. So those are the key components then of the settlement. And again, back to the 10%, the customer's protection is that it is capped at 10%. Mm-hmm. If there's any excess over that, that is returned 100% to the customer.
Now, why didn't you return 100% in 2015 as well?
I think that in discussions or negotiations, I think that chances are your return probably will be lower by 2015. Oh. It's really what will happen because you have it, you have costs of inflation and additional investment.
Is there a moratorium on another rate case in 2004?
There was not a moratorium, to the best of my knowledge, in 2004.
So you could have already filed for one in 2005.
Had we needed one, we could have filed for one in 2005. That's correct. Yep. But due to the, you know, some of the changes the company has made, we're able to stay out almost a decade. I want to break down the components of the cost of service by the particular costs. 72% of the cost of service in this settlement is related to gas costs. So again,
what cost did you figure for this slide for gas?
Pardon me?
What's the cost of gas you use in this slide?
Let me refer to, we'll look that up and we'll.
Okay, just to give me a reference point.
Yep. 14% is O&M, of this proposed settlement. 5% would be the depreciation expense. About 1% would be taxes other than income taxes, such as property taxes and payroll taxes. And then 2% relates to income taxes. The federal government gets its share. And then the return component, what the company is allowed to earn on its investment, comprises 6% then of the total.
Is that advertising number that Mike talked about, is that not embedded in this, or is that embedded here somewhere?
That would be in O&M, in the advertising.
Okay.
All labor, benefits, advertising, materials, all that would be part of that 14%.
Okay. The cost of service. Every case is different. But my viewpoint has been on advertising dollars to not approve advertising dollars because it's ratepayer money. And so what kind of dollar amount are we talking for that advertising? Any idea?
I think Montana Dakota's advertising is minimal. We'll pull that number out as well.
Okay. But, I mean, if we're putting the cards out early, that may become a sticking point for me in the advertising dollar just to be consistent in what we've done. And so we'll just see where that goes.
The cost of gas that's included is $5.25. That's what's included in this 72%.
Thank you.
No, I thought the proposed settlement was exclusive of the gas cost. I thought this whole rate case was.
It is. What we're demonstrating here is the total customer bill and
okay.
the components of a customer bill.
Okay.
I just wanted to get a reference point of what
right.
they're using
yeah.
the cost of
but
gas.
For our members of the media here, I don't want them confused by thinking that somehow we're negotiating a cost of gas. That's totally separate.
What we're
talking about
selling
is
on is would be the 72 less 72%.
The other colored
correct.
Areas.
The 28% is what we'd mm-hmm. be talking about.
Okay. Commissioner, I wanted to touch a little bit too on advertising. You understand there's cost of advertising that's got nothing to do with promotional advertising. Things like safety and those sorts
all
of
free dig.
That become
free dig, yes.
part of that are part of advertising, and I think that the commission expects us to do to protect the public that
you
are
may
in
want
that
to
category
some
that
more
have
detail
nothing
on
to do
that.
With promotion.
I can provide some detail on the advertising if you'd like.
Well, and we can do that at a later date if you want to supplement that to Mike, but I think that's a good point, Dan, is that there are certain things I would consider more appropriate than others to be advertising. And so if those are costs that are the traditional call before you dig things, I would look at those a lot differently than a feel-good advertising campaign about buying gas or something.
That none of that is included. The only advertising, as you mentioned, it's the informational, which is safety, and then things like the ads in the phone books, you know, so yeah. people can call. And also some advertising that we do in the communities where we have take ads out in the local yearbooks or the newspapers that say, you know, Montana, Dakota in the community to serve. It's our way of being part of the community. In total, we had $111,000 of advertising in our test year.
Okay. Out of that was an increase for Mr. Dillers. That was one of those things that jumped up from the previous rate case to this rate case. An increase in advertising was you could visually see that as a different increase.
And the safety advertising is one area that there has been an increase in just because of higher profile of safety now compared to 2004. So that we have seen an increase in our safety advertising since that time.
Thank you.
This next slide points out what's really driving this settlement request, and that is the investment that has been made in North Dakota since the last rate case. You can see that back in 2003, we had about a gross plant investment of $75 million. That has grown to about $185 million projected for 2014. And Jay will discuss some of what those major investments are in just a few minutes here. Again, this depicts an investment per customer compared to 2003. It was about $850 back then, and projected in 2014, it's about $1,800 per customer, the plant investment.
So when you're talking to customers about why you need to raise their rates, you would talk about this. Back in 2004, we had to spend this much to serve you. Today, we have to spend this much.
This much in the system. That's correct.
Okay.
This slide depicts O&M costs per customer. Back in 2004, it was about $200. And you can see that it dropped a little bit in 05. I think there's some benefit changes that caused that drop. And it was pretty flat until 2009. And what happened in 2009 and 10 are the result of the acquisitions that we made with Cascade and Intermountain, as well as Great Plains and some of the cost savings associated with those acquisitions. We did see a slight increase then in 2011. Again, that's responding to the growth that we're seeing across the state, and then it tapers off, and we're projecting it at about $170 per customer in 2014. So that's about an 18% drop since the last case. And over that time, same time, the consumer price index rose at about 22%. So we were able to drop it about 18%, and the consumer price index rose about 22% over that same period. Okay. Now we'll go over some of the activities or some of the major investments, and Jay's going to discuss those.
Before we start, maybe I can add a little bit to the advertising, but I would ask Rita first, is the public awareness advertising that we do included in that advertising section?
Yes.
That would be, there's a DOT requirement that we provide notice to anybody living along transmission pipelines, and that's a fairly new requirement in the last, I'm just guessing, probably 4 years or so. And that involves sending notices to not just our customers, but anybody else who might live along those lines. And that getting notices to those folks sometimes involves direct mailing or using the coupon mailers, those types of things to get that word out to those individuals that we can't send it to in their bill. And that being a recent requirement and being a fairly expensive venture to be able to do that might explain a lot of that increase not the whole cost, but the increase in cost on the advertising.
All right, thank you.
All right, so I will be discussing some of the major investments, the items that we've invested in. I think most of these things will match very closely to the pie chart that Mr. Diller showed that had the percentage of investments that listed mains and border stations and buildings and things like that. I've basically have a pictorial of all of those things that matches very nicely. The first...
I was wondering what a town border station looks like. There you go.
Right there. this first picture, we'll start with this. This is the... infrastructure that we've invested in, and it's basically from the pipeline where we take possession of the gas through to the meter where we deliver possession of the gas to the customer. So the first picture is a picture of a town border station. That is where the gas comes from the pipeline at transmission pressure. We reduce the pressure and send it through our mains. We've also had to add quite a bit of main in lots of our communities, particularly Williston and Dickinson, where we've added looping lines around the town. And I think, Commissioner Fedorchuk, you had a question about do these serve, are they there for the purpose of growth, serving customers kind of immediately or directly? They do that. They're built for the growth and adding new customers basically on the outer edges of town, but they also serve another function, and that is for redundancy, reliability, to be able to continue to serve customers in the case of a dig-in. It allows you to serve customers from two different directions. So if you have a dig-in, you can sectionalize and continue to serve the customers that would normally be on the end of a pipe that would be cut off if a pipe is damaged or had to be shut off because of a leak or something. So these new mains aren't just strictly for serving customers. They really do enhance the reliability of our system. So they do benefit the existing customers as well. And we've done those things in some of the bigger projects that we've undertaken were Williston and Dickinson, but we've also been doing these things over the past 10 years in Bismarck and Mandan. Minot has seen some of this. So they're, it's not strictly a Bakken type project. The next slide is basically going from the larger mains around the towns to another district regulator station, regulates the pressure and drops the pressure to basically distribution pressure that can serve the customers' homes. And we've had investment in those as new developments come in. Again, in Williston, Watford City, Dickinson, Minot, but also as Bismarck has expanded over the past few years, those types of items are added, and we have to make investment in those in more than just the significant growth towns in the Bakken.
How do you swag your size, your mains, not knowing exactly what the size of who you're going to deliver is going to be in 10 years?
That's...
I mean, what do you go 50% capacity and you just kind of give yourself room, or you run it real tight? Or
I don't think there's any particular, it's more probably art than science. It is a best guess at what the next development is going to be, what direction the town's going to grow in, what are the likelihoods of industrial customers coming on versus just residential. What are the possibilities of connecting to another loop to be able to supply additional from the other direction? I think there's a lot of things that go into there, so it's really a case-specific determination. There's really not just one formula that says do this.
You see where I'm going with that, the same sure you guys talk about it, too. You build one, and then 2 years later you need another line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that's always the question, and the question is, well, if we build it so big,
nobody can use it.
Are we going to get return on that, or are we going to get told, no, you should have built 4 inches instead of 8 inches?
My advice to MDU has always been the same, like in the Heskett station, build it bigger. it is.
I'll relay that information to our engineers, and they will like to hear that. they always like to build for. The additional capacity, be safe. Let's see. Yep, meter set is the end, and that again is really the investment we make in those meters is very specific, or correlates very specifically to the number of customers. So that number changes year by year. I think Mr. Diller's slides showed that. And again, we've had significant growth in Bismarck and Minot, not just in Bismarck, or in Dickinson and Williston. We've also had pretty good growth in Jamestown, Devil's Lake, and some of those smaller towns as well. So we are seeing lots of meters going into all of our territory. Let's see here. All right, which one's the button on the right? Uh-oh.
Oops.
Now what did I do?
The other right.
The other right. That was as right as you can get. Let's see here.
Click on. Yeah.
I wasn't doing that.
I'll just move it forward.
Better. Very good.
There we go.
Okay. Let's attack this slide kind of backwards. Let's start down here. We talked about on the previous slide about our investment in new growth. This slide is meant to depict investment in or reinvestment in existing infrastructure and updating and upgrading our pipe systems. This one happens to show Minot during the flood, and that had been talked about a little bit earlier.
that we did have to invest a fairly good chunk of money into rebuilding the portion of Minot that got flooded. I think we had over 4,000 meters that we had to pull, and then all of the service lines that were serving those meters had to either be inspected and recertified, or they had to be replaced, basically. And in addition, in Minot, the lower picture of those two, we had I think it was a 10, maybe it was a 12-inch main that was underneath the river. The river got eroded, and that pipe piece of pipe was damaged. We had to replace that. That was a fairly major activity to replace that chunk of pipe under the river. But Minot wasn't the only place where we've done pipeline replacements. We continually assess our system, and when there's the opportunity, sometimes with road projects and things like that in towns, we will take a look at our pipeline or our pipe system and make replacements as necessary anywhere in our system. So wasn't specifically in Minot. It was throughout our whole system, and it's an ongoing upgrade project that we continually do.
Jay, how long was the chunk under the river in Minot that had to be replaced?
I don't recall. Bob, do you have?
I don't. Probably a half mile, I think. I remember going up there.
It was a long. Yeah, I was thinking. I don't know if it was a. Yeah, it could have been a half.
What a far I shoot my deer away.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Couldn't pass up.
The upper right picture here is a picture of a meter set, and what that's depicting is our automated meter reading. That was one of those investments I think that Frank referred to, that it was an investment in a capital investment, but it was really intended as a O&M savings. We saw very significant savings in O&M by putting the automated meter reading system in, not just in meter reading savings, but in customers cutting in and cutting out. When the customer calls to turn off their service, we're able to do that remotely, as opposed to having to send a truck out every time somebody does that, and we saved a significant amount of money on labor and fuel and vehicle costs by not having to go to the residence every time somebody moved in and moved out. Along those lines, a couple of the other things that we've done that we had invested in that were very good cost savings for us, our mobile dispatching system, which I think was actually initially included in the previous rate case, but that was one where we made an investment in technology and were able to save a significant amount of money in labor by dispatching them through a mobile system. One of the other things that we did was not necessarily a large capital investment, but when we had our integration efforts, we went to being able to pay at Western Union stations as opposed to all of our local offices, and we saw a tremendous labor savings by doing that as well. And so that was a savings passed on to all of the customers through the rate case. And the other large investment that we've done here, I think you've seen the picture of our new bill several times and a lot of discussion on our CIS system. But that's one of the other things we have as a major investment in this case. All right, let's try this again. You got it? All right. We had talked about the Williston office as well as the Watford City office. Right now we are in the process of replacing the Williston office building as well as the Williston warehouse. I don't have any photos of the office building up there, but these are some photos of why we really needed to replace the Williston warehouse building. This picture up here is kind of cluttered and hard to see, but this is one of the buildings in our warehouse area. Down here are two more, And here's a gas crew truck, a welding truck, some line trucks along here, and this is in the winter. Those are the vehicles that don't fit inside the building, and so when there is an emergency and we have to use one of those vehicles, sometimes they don't start all that well when it's 20 below or so. It's much nicer to have all the vehicles inside. The next picture shows trying to get some of these larger vehicles inside. If you can see, the mirrors are right out here. It's the building was designed for vehicles that we used many, many years ago, and they fit in fairly easily. The vehicles are getting bigger and bigger, and they're not exactly fitting. You can kind of see we don't get exactly perfect every time. A little bit of damage there. Another picture shows a couple of things. This is the same vehicle backed in, and the overhead door rolls up to about right there. There's actually less clearance for the top of this boom than there is on the sides where that where the mirrors are trying to fit in. I don't know how those guys actually do that on a daily basis. The other thing this picture shows is the working conditions. It's very dark in there, and this is where we ask our guys to go in and do their welding and things like that. There's actually not enough outlets and things like that hooked up for welding machines. They actually have to set their welding trucks outside, run the welders inside, and do their work inside. You know, ventilation's not perfect. There's whole lots of reasons why we need to add that building. One of the other kind of main things we're looking at is we have the office folks, the engineers and supervision in one building, and we have the crews, gas crews and electric crews in a different building. Communications is not all that great. If we can get them all in one building, we believe that efficiency will really improve as well. Then this last picture here is kind of about safety and environmental aspects. On both the gas and electric side, we have pieces of equipment that come out of our system that contain PCBs. There's some requirements for properly containing the PCBs. These are a couple of homemade manufactured metal tubs. You know, the kind of state of the art is to be able to just wheel the things into a contained area. The requirement is to be able to contain all the free liquids. This is just a slow process. You have to be able to use equipment to lift items into those bins. We'll be able to save a lot of time on all sorts of different processes by improving this building.
Jay, you should really talk to the electric utility about upgrading your service there.
It's inside. We probably could hire an electrician to do that. there's enough juice to the building. It is probably on us, though, that we haven't upgraded the insides. And this is a depiction of the new building after we get it all done. It's in process. We expect to be able to occupy this building in March of this coming year, March of 2014. It's built in the location where we used to have a small power plant located there. We tore that building down and are in the process of putting this building in its place.
So what's going to the building by the courthouse, what happens to that one now?
We actually are in the process of working with the county. Worked with the county and the city. They worked it out amongst themselves. We're probably going to be selling that to the county.
Okay. And then give me where is this new one going to be at? I don't know where the old one is at, or the station you're just...
I believe it's 2nd Avenue, which is when you come in on 85 from the south, okay, and you turn, so you're heading east into town, and if you veer off of 85 as it turns north, if you keep going straight east, that takes you on that, I think it's 2nd Avenue, and it's right on that road.
Okay.
The only local landmark I can think of is J. Dubs Restaurant is like right across the street.
Yep.
So it's just to the south of that.
Next to the Julie Fedorchak Highway birthplace. Randy Christman's mother-in-law lives up there.
We can go back one. In the meantime, the first picture I showed that had all the trucks stored outside, that's where we used to have a storage area. We've actually got some land west of town, and so in this area we've actually already built a storage area for all of our materials, kind of a material laydown area, and we'll continue to operate that as well. Okay. And this is the picture of Commissioner Culk. You mentioned the one-man shop. This is where he worked out of. This the top is two different views of our office building in downtown Watford City.
He and I had coffee there in 2008.
Nice. Yeah, and at the time it was one person. We're now up to five, with the expectation that we'll probably be adding a couple more crews. We also have currently our five own employees plus some contractors, gas and electric contractors.
So the plan would be that you have Williston office to dispatch down, I'm guessing, to the lake and then to the east. And you got Watford City covering south till somewhere Dickinson picks it up. And then going to Minot, you guys must have an office there somewhere too.
We have folks in Tioga, Stanley, Kenmare's up. Crosby, we do have some other smaller, they kind of were like this one-man shops, although I think almost all of those we've added another person.
But your goal is to have crews out there to react more quickly than you can in Dickinson and Williston.
Yeah, to be able to react to the to something that if something would happen in Stanley, we have somebody there that can at least make the situation safe and begin to work on it, and depending on the size of the issue.
How do you cost share now between electricity side? I would assume electricity does something in these offices too.
Yes.
So how do we know what to assign to the gas side, to the electricity side, for the cost of these office buildings?
We allocate the cost of the buildings between electric and gas, and we base it on a formula based on the number of customers and the distribution plant.
In that area. Okay.
So right now, those would be about 70% going to electric, about 30% going to natural gas.
Okay. Thank you.
So in Watford City, we have a shop as part of the office building, and then we have a warehouse.
Jay, yes. Can you just hold on? I want to ask a question. So let's assume you had the same amount of customers, okay? So then you also calculate in the cost of the plant facilities per customer as well. So if you had the same amount of customers, it still wouldn't necessarily be that they would each pay 50%, is it?
It's based on the number of customers and then the value of the plant.
Okay.
A combination of the two. We say, okay, customers might be 50-50, but plant might be 80-20. And so it's a composite factor. It ends up being, and we use a statewide factor for all our combination buildings that are electric and natural gas.
So when you're figuring in the plant, you're balancing that, the towns with old plant that haven't had to have a bunch of new construction with the new areas that have had all the new additional costs, correct?
Yes, it's an overall state average.
Okay, thank you. Just North Dakota, though?
Just North Dakota only.
So that kind of wraps up the Watford City building. And I guess just to add on to that, we have a couple other building activities that we had undertaken in the past few years. In Bismarck, we had two different offices. We have our main service center, and we had a downtown office. We sold that building, consolidated everybody down into the service center. We did basically the exact same thing in Jamestown. We had an office and a warehouse, and we sold the office and moved everybody into the warehouse. And in Park River, we had a facility that we were leasing, and we also had a building that we own in Grafton, and so we consolidated everything into the building that we own and cut the lease and got out of that building. So it's not, we build when we need to build, and we get out of the buildings when we don't need them anymore. So that's all I have. If there are any other questions?
One quick question. So if you were to summarize what percentage of these costs are kind of shared by all, or benefits of the investments are shared by all versus the ones that are purely driven by new customers. So you could give a response to a customer in Williston who says, I don't want to be paying for all these new neighborhoods. I paid for my neighborhood. They should have to pay for theirs. What percentage of the total revenue requirement would be the new customer, the needs, the investments to serve the new customers?
I think Garrett had a slide.
I think in one of Mike's presentations, he had kind of the investment in 13 broke out between the geo and common area would be what would be probably allocated. And that's maybe.
So the Badlands, 49%, that would. I don't.
That would be Badlands and Dakota Heartland. You'd add those together, and that's what would be direct to gas. It would be the common. Investments such as CC&B.
But she's asking the investment for to serve new customers right. as opposed to the stuff. Total system improvements.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, extensions as opposed to upgrades and replacements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you can get a perfect number for that because the town border station, is, as Joey pointed out, is serving new existing customers, or a loop is adding reliability to your whole town in addition to meeting the growth.
Even the town border stations are intended for new customers, but they also serve the function of adding additional reliability to the whole town in case something would happen on one end of town. You'd be able to serve from a new location, and so it does provide reliability to those existing customers. So it's really very difficult to say this piece is strictly for new customers because it actually does provide a function to help the existing customers as well. Mm-hmm. So it's
even a rough number, like largely, like say 10% could be totally just kind of new customers. Or
we do have the detail in our filing showing what is new and what is replacement, and the majority is new, but we could look at that and from that give an estimate of what is purely new versus the things that probably be both for new and replacement.
Sure.
Mr. Diller had the slide where he had it broken up into different types. For example, the CIS system is for everybody. I mean, that's new customer, everybody.
Right.
Service mains and meters is primarily going to be probably newer customers, new areas. There's going to be some replacements. I mean, my meter might get replaced next year, but it's primarily going to be new stuff. New office building in Williston, I don't know that you can say that that's new versus old. At some point, those buildings need to be replaced. Town border stations, as Jay said, somewhat dictated by, new growth. But at the same token, it's something that, those need to be replaced and upgraded, and they serve benefit everybody. Mains and loops, probably a lot of that's for growth. But then again, you're also doing a lot of reliability, and you're doing some replacements in there occasionally too. So, I don't know. If you had to just ballpark this, maybe 40%, 30% strictly growth. Yeah, strictly growth, and then the others would probably be, combination of growth or versus, and a benefit to existing customers, that if you had to ballpark something.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Call Mr. Mormon, unless there's any questions to Jay. Jay will stick around, so, he'll be here if something comes up later.
Thank you, Dan. Commissioner, I think just to kind of add on to that, how do you break it down as far as new to old? And I think one thing, if the slide we have up here, even going to, I'm going to mess this up. If you could just jump ahead here, one more slide, please. Kind of showing Dickinson. The existing system before we put the loop line, and the loop line is the red, starting in your lower right-hand corner, going up to the top. Oh, it's the red kind of rectangular line, if you will, there. the existing feed prior to this Newtown border station, a loop line, was kind of right down in the middle there. That's the only town border station that fed the city of Dickinson. So if when you take a look at this loop line, it's expensive to put in. The other option we had to add new customers and to continue to serve our existing was basically go through the middle of downtown Dickinson, tear it up, put a larger pipe in, higher pressure, whatever, to serve it type deal. So it's reliability for this. We now have two feeds, like Jay was alluding to before. For reliability, we have two feeds, one on the bottom, the old one, and the new loop line. If one of those would get damaged for some reason, we continue to feed most of the town off the other town border station. So probably a little bit different twist, what's new and what's old, but again, to continue the reliability and to serve as you go new, we instead of putting a loop line in, we'd basically have to tear up all of downtown Dickinson to upgrade the piping, and that's really not an option. So So if I could just jump back, please. What I'm going to kind of do is just kind of dig in a little bit deeper. Jay kind of hit the high level as far as the town border station, some of the expansions. What we did is we put in approximately 10 new town border stations last year within the last 2 years. And what we've done is added some loop lines. But I'm going to start on the kind of the lower right-hand side. And that's Dickinson, or excuse me, Bismarck and Mandan.
Oh, I think there's a pointer somehow on that thing there.
You know, I've got one.
If you push the middle down.
Here's Bismarck, Mandan.
Brings his own pointer, nice.
Right. And when you take a look, and we get a lot of heat when I talk to our superintendents down here saying, you know, there's so much stuff going on in the Bakken. And they say, Bob, he said, we've added 30 new subdivisions in the last 2 years. So there's major expenses going on in Bismarck just to continue to add to the new customers coming in. You take a look at customer counts over the past 2 years, we don't have the 20% growth we have in Dickinson, Williston, Kildare. Bismarck's growing a little over 6%. So it's a substantial growth there. And when you take a look at how far north we go, I think with the last expansions we've done, we're somewhere like 10 to 12 miles from Wilton. So we're getting a long ways north. With the growth going north on the Highway 83, I think it's a very good thing to do. But, again, they've added 30 subdivisions in the last couple of years. And that's into addition to filling everything else in the existing subdivision. So the boys are very busy, and they let me know that all the time when I start talking about the Bakken. And going up to Minot, too, I called this morning. I knew there were some additional loop lines going in. And it's not a new town border station, but they just finished another line 3.5 miles right up in this area for Minot. And that is, to, again, add some support for they had some low pressure areas here, plus the new growth that's coming out of this industrial park. So that's something that's not even on this picture yet. Again, it's 3.5 miles of additional loop line that they've added to the city of Minot. And again, as you can see, the other subdivisions, some blue, some red, a fair amount of growth going on in the city of Minot also. Now we get into pretty much what we call the Bakken area, the 10 Newtown border stations. And when we took a look at the growth that was going on and how we expand to it, Williston Basin serves all of these locations over here. We approached them because some of the town border stations were just running out of capacity. A couple of them, Kildare, Watford City existing TBS. What we were able to do with Williston Basin go when they replaced a regulator, they replaced a meter, just upsize it for $20,000 to $30,000. Very inexpensive to do. So we looked at that as the first option, and Commissioner Kalk asked, well, how do you build? What do you design for? I mean, these guys up there in Williston and Dickinson and the other locations, guys are coming in with plats of 2,000 house developments side by side by side. It's like you put down on a spreadsheet, what's the probability of these going in? And that's a tough enough guess yourself. They're incremented up. You put 150 in this year, 200 next year. These are their projections. So these guys had a real tough time anticipating what's going to be happening, much less 5 years down the road, much less next year. So we did a lot of discussion where we're going to go with this to add pipeline, to add town border stations, to add infrastructure. So, again, Kildare, very small investment there to increase capacity. Tioga, Stanley. Here is Stanley right here, and here is Tioga. We had to increase the capacity of the border station. This wasn't a very simple fix as far as a valve or a meter or a regulator. We had to completely redo the town border station itself, plus add some piping to get from WBI to expand the capacity of the lateral running into Tioga. Same with Stanley, same with Ray. You get down to Williston, and what we did there is we added a loop line last year. And what that did, it increased the capacity from the existing WBI Town Border Station into the west end, where there's substantial growth in the west side of Williston. Also added a second border station just to the northeast of Williston, and that we had to bore the river and come across and feed some of this area that was developing rapidly up there also. We also have proposed, we're trying to get it in this year, as an additional pipeline to serve the southeast corner of Williston. Hopefully we get it in. We're having a lot of issues with landowners out there. Landowners is very difficult to, some are very difficult to work with. I mean, they've been hit every other day for an easement across the land, and it's they're making it very tough on us. But we're working through the issues and getting it there. So, and what that's going to do, that will, again, loop the Williston on this side here. And eventually, as Williston continues to grow, we may have to build a loop line, because we anticipate this filling in. The bypass is anticipated to go somewheres here. We'll continue to build this in as we expand the town. Trenton, we had to put a lateral in. We were just absolutely out of capacity. We pulled out a 4-inch, put, I believe, a 6 or an 8-inch lateral in. Watford City, Williston Basin has a long lateral coming in from their main line. That was running out of capacity. So we increased the initial border station very cheap. We added a second border station off of Garden Creek line from a new processing plant into Northern Border. We're just finalizing that. We should have that back in service probably within the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks type deal. Dickinson, this is the loop line that we, again, added. A new tap off a WBI system brought much-needed capacity into the north side, because we were at the point we just could not feed any more gas to the north side. We were just out of capacity. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what we've done with our TBS. If we go to the next one.
I know we're an hour and a half into this. I'm afraid to ask, but can you give us a real quick breakdown on what you're going to do on these town border stations? Because I have not been to one. What in the world? I mean, you're spending a lot of money on these things, so can you tell me where all the money goes when you do a town border? I mean, you got a heater. Is that half of the cost?
You know, let's jump to the next one if we could. This kind of has some components here. This is the, Jay had this on his, this is the border station. This line heater right here, the line heater itself costs about $60,000. The time you pour the concrete and everything else, you probably have $100,000 into it. This is the regulator station, the town border station. What WBI does, when we had to rebuild this, they gave us a riser and a meter. We supply all of the regulation to cut it down to the pressure that we can use it and distribute it around town. So this, dependent upon the size of the stations, these regulators right here, and there's four of them as a backup system, a parallel system, these regulators will probably cost about $10,000. You do the miscellaneous fittings, everything else, put the building up for, you know, $20,000-$30,000, concrete work, fence around it. The materials alone on this are probably $100,000. Some of the smaller ones, like we did for Stanley and Tioga, we anticipate those, we can probably set those for about $325,000. That's pretty much the land materials, much smaller than this station right here.
I was thinking we just have one valve.
That's the way I look
more,
at it.
It's a little more complex.
It is. That's the way I look at it, too, and it's never that way at all. So, but that's kind of what it is. Again, $60,000 for this here. This loop line right here, the materials alone, I believe, were somewhere around $2.5 million. What we did, we had some areas we had to bore through, so we couldn't pull any plastic. We did steel for the first, I believe, the 7,800 feet, and we had a bunch of bores. The bores themselves cost probably, half a million dollars just to pull them type deal. And right about here, as we transition from steel to 12-inch plastic to feed all the way up there, but I think it's somewhere around the $2.5-$2.7 million for the pipe. Total project with the TBS, piping, labor, and everything was somewhere around, I believe, it was $6 million.
Hey, Bob, I would add to, a lot of times someone that's not familiar with our industry would ask, well, why do you need a heater, right?
And the thermodynamics that are associated with natural gas or the energy is rather interesting. If we're taking line pressure off from Williston Basin, let's just say it's 550 pounds, and we want to run it in at a safe pressure into the community at 100 pounds, you've dropped 450 pounds of pressure. For every 15 pounds, roughly, that the pressure drops, you lose 1 degree of gas temperature. So the standard gas temperature usually should be around 60 degrees. If you dropped it from 550 to 100, that's 450. That's 30 of those increments. So you've just lost 30 degrees out of your gas temperature. So you've gone from 60 degrees to 30 degrees. Now it's freezing. So as it runs through, if there's any moisture left in that gas stream, you would have frozen regulators, frozen ground. It would refrigerate the ground around the piping system. And so after all of your regulation to cut the pressure down, that's when it runs through that line heater to run the gas temperature back up. The standard temperature to measure gas is 60 degrees. So that's kind of the technicalities, but I know that's a common question I've had a lot of people ask me in the gas business is, why do you need to heat the gas up? And that's precisely why.
You take a look at this. This is what they call a pilot regulator to better control it. That's just a big frost ball right there. And the exact same thing Frank said. You lose temperature as you decrease the pressure, and that's just refrigeration effect on the outside of that regulator itself. So that answers your question, yes, Mike. And again, we had some loop lines, and some of the town border stations, we were able to do very inexpensive. The loop lines off of Watford City, off of Williston, off of Dickinson. You know, you start running the $2 to $4 to $6 million range. It's very expensive to run gas to them. As far as the Dickinson one, just as far as, you know, what, you know, how far is this going to go? It's a tough thing to project the usage 5 years, 10 years down the road. That's a 12-inch pipe, and it's just about double the capacity we had for the city of Dickinson. And if we look in the future, too, there's other options. We may be able to do this, a third station if Dickinson continues to grow, but this should take us into ways into the future. I think one more slide, please. This gets into our cost of our gas, what all rolls into it. As you can see, this is the commodity price of gas. We have monthly purchase gas adjustments, and as you can see, from 03 to actually to a proposed or October of 13, monthly PGAs, it spikes up type deal. Hurricanes here, hurricanes there really affected the price. It's kind of flattened out here. Here, reason it dipped down so much here is, if you remember back in the the winter right prior to this, the 2011-2012 heating season, there was no heating season. Very warm, came out of winter, very heavy in storage nationally. Set a new record going into the winter, so people were trying to not give gas away, but very inexpensive. Supply and demand just wasn't in the balance. So that was the dip we had in here. And as you can see, the last 10 years or so with all the shale and everything in the U.S., it's starting to flat out. Gulf of Mexico doesn't affect it as it did in the past, and we're starting to see a flattening of the commodity price. Pipeline charges all rolled into here. Storage charges are rolled into there. And this is our delivery charge, again, since 03 to October of 13, our last rate case, I believe, is here. So pretty flat, pretty good run we had there as far as not having come in with rate case for the natural gas systems.
Where's your gas coming from?
Commissioner, we buy it. We love to buy all the Bakken gas we can, and we do buy as much as we can. But the way the pipeline is set up, you can only physically move so much gas through a 16-inch or a 12-inch pipe. So to serve all of our customers across the MDU territory, we have to buy so much off CIG into the Billings, around the Billings area to move gas into Billings. Some comes across into the Miles City, into North Dakota. We're buying a fair amount of gas in the Bakken right now. Whatever we can, we're buying out of the Bakken. Also buying some gas off the northern border to serve eastern North Dakota, Bismarck, and this area right here. So it's a combination of things. A fair amount of gas from the Amerada Hess plant at Tioga, picking some additional gas up with their expansion up there. But a lot at Sydney area, Montana, the One Oak plants, Continental Resources, those areas up there, we're picking a lot of gas up. We're picking as much Bakken gas as we can, but again, we can't buy everything there and disperse it because we
We just don't have the physical pipeline to move it to where we need it to meet demand.
It does, and has this plentiful supply just in this region changed your need to store it, or do you still buy a lot, store it, and
we do. The stores we've done for the last 15, 20 years, we use as basically our physical hedge going into wintertime. We buy gas pretty much on a flat daily basis. We put gas in the summertime when we don't need it, pull it out in the wintertime when we need it. Two reasons. One is, again, it's a physical hedge. We'll know what roughly 40% of our gas is priced at going into wintertime. Plus, it's a deliverability and reliability factor. The way the storage fields are in our distribution area, we can pull large amounts of gas in pretty much on call from those two storage fields, one at Baker, Montana, the other one is just south of Billings area, about 60 miles south of Billings. So the deliverability, get a high amount of deliverability in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of our load is space heating load. So, I mean, it goes from one day to the next. It varies drastically, and storage is a real good way to handle that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're in the open market every day buying gas, and that can be extremely volatile.
Okay. The your pipeline safety program, where are those costs shown at? I mean, do you roll those into – because where I'm going with this is it – in a previous rate case with Xcel Energy, we had a lot of reliability concerns, and they were asking for $10, and we said, we're going to give you $15, but you're going to spend an extra $5 in Fargo and put more in for reliability. You can do all these other things. Could we break out if I said, hey, I'm for an extra $500,000 going to you for pipeline safety. Could you walk me through how you would spend that? Or is there, I mean, could you say that we don't need it? Could you say that we could use it? That's a line of discussion that I'd just like a little bit down there if we could.
Pass that cost on to someone else.
Well, it's going to go back to the ratepayers, obviously. But I mean, how could you have approach of priorities that you could, you know, you got federal regulation looming out there for gas pipeline safety, and so that may or may not come. I think it's going to come because it's not like the CO2 rules where there's folks fighting against it. This is something that the industry is needed, I think. And so, how would we approach that if? If a commissioner was so inclined to say you get an extra amount of money for pipeline for your safety program for gas,
I think you're talking mainly on just replacement programs and upgrades of pipe. Is that
I mean, there's above. It could be a more vigorous inspection program. It could be quicker maintenance, more maintenance. It could be more replacement for you've got those questionable pipelines that don't you have a replacement schedule. How could we even approach that?
Well, I think we would probably put the money towards our DIMP program. Distribution Integrity Management Program, which is basically the assessment of all of your pipelines all the way down to service lines. And it's you do all of your physical inspection of all the pipes and put all that information into a computer model, and it'll spit out.
But could you do this for me and work it through some venue, whatever it is how much you currently spend on your integrity management program, all these, and what you could do with an additional, put a number out there, $250,000 a year. What could you do with that, and what could you do with $500,000 more a year? And then we'll just see how that discussion plays out.
Sure, and I think the quick, easy answer would be we'd put some of the money initially into the assessment portion of it, and then the next portion would go to replacements to address whatever we saw out of the additional results. But I think at this point we have a pretty good program and a pretty good handle on what the condition of our system is in. And you know, we're here talking about Montana, Dakota, but I think one of the things you'll see when the time comes is at Great Plains. We have a PVC system there, and right now in Wahpeton, we are working on a replacement to get that PVC system replaced. And so as a combined company, we look at that and see, you know, there certainly is a risk in the PVC system, and we're working on that very diligently.
I'll just open that door up, and you guys can do what you want with it, and we'll see what all plays out.
One option would be to look at some type of, you know, system integrity tracker, where as we spent the money, we could come in and file, like we have some of the other trackers as we spent the money on the distribution system or on more expense, then we could come in and track it then rather than
getting... Well, going down this path suggests that what they have isn't safe or is somehow compromised. So we'd want to make sure we had some solid documentation to justify
that. I'm not looking at a tracker. I just go back to there was a targeted... Xcel Energy felt that they had a good system, but we wanted a better system. So we put $250,000 to these IntelliTeam switches. There was a direct cost for a direct improvement. So something like that. If you had something you could, I don't want to start some other tracking mechanism, but if there was something that you really want to do for pipeline safety damage prevention in the next 2 years, figure out what that might be with the cost of a specific deliverable. And I'm speaking as one of three here, but I would lobby for that. Is if we could put it to something that is above and beyond, that is something that fringe area. Because to Julie's point, I think you're spot on it. I'm not saying your program isn't adequate. I'm saying if we can do a little bit more, since we're in the middle of this rate case discussion, given the backdrop of pipeline safety nationally on gas and quite honestly locally in the state, it might not be a bad idea to look at it.
Let us take a look at it and see what Jay would...
Yeah, and I would say that we have addressed some of that already in things included in this rate case where we have added additional staff to our pipeline safety staff in just the last year. We have done the DIMP program. We are quite confident in the safety of the system, but certainly adding something else is a good thing.
I don't have anything else, but I see if Randy and Julie do. Before I forget, Dan, would you offer all this up as your testimony for the company?
Yes, we would.
All right, thank you. So received.
That's all. Any other questions for our witnesses? Our presentation is complete. If there's no other questions, I would just say that we appreciate this opportunity to come before you. You know, nobody likes rate increases. Company doesn't like rate increases, but... At the same token, I think this rate increase has given us an opportunity. We're pretty proud of the story we have to tell with what we've done with our gas system here. And I think you've heard from our witnesses here that we're pretty proud with what we've done in terms of controlling costs. When you think about a 4% increase over 10 years, that's less than 0.5% average per year. There's not too many services that can brag about something like that the way we've done. And certainly we can't take credit for the decrease in cost of gas, but when you look at the total delivered cost of gas, the customers to heat their homes, heat their water, do whatever else they're doing with natural gas in their homes, in my personal opinion, it's probably one of the bargains any consumer has got in North Dakota right now. I mean, certainly there are a lot of communities that wish they had more access to natural gas, and that's one of the challenges we have with the developers you talked about too. Is trying to meet that request for service and trying to keep up with it. So we urge your support for the settlement. We understand there's some steps to go through with the public input hearings and the rate design issues to go through, but we really believe this is a fair settlement and frankly, a pretty good deal for customers all said and done. Thank you.
Commissioner, anything else?
Just one final thought on the safety stuff. I think this is fine to explore. I will say, however, that I'm assuming that you guys are out there on the cutting edge always looking at the safety of the system and are bringing forward anything that you would detect as a concern or an issue. I don't think the commission has a history of declining things that you request for safety reasons, nor would I ever suggest that you cut corners on safety to save money. So I just wanted to reinforce that. And see what you come up with on this. But again, you're the experts. You know your system. I couldn't even begin to tell you whether it's, you know, the cutting edge or not. But I'm counting on you guys to do that and be looking out for those sorts of things. Otherwise, I think the information was great, very helpful. Look forward to the next step in this process.
Thank you, ma'am.
Before we wrap up, I just want to go back to Garrett on the moratorium on a new case till 2015. I assume that means January of 2015. So we're basically saying a year.
A year is what we're
13
saying.
13 months, maybe.
We will not have the ability to file a case in a year for a year.
So what happens if we get to February? I mean, gas price has been pretty volatile. I suppose whatever we've seen, they could get worse. could get more dramatic even. So let's say they get even more volatile than we've seen in the past, but they go up. And so all of a sudden by February, maybe gas is $15. Is there a...
This doesn't include our PGAs.
This does not include that. Okay.
This is just the distribution piece of it.
Okay.
Good question. Okay, I don't have anything else. Going once, going twice. All right, we'll close the informal. Thank you all.